I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is 1 week from the NFL draft in New England, and appropriately, Elliot Wolf, the man who will be making the final decision with the number 3 overall pick, or wherever the Patriots pick, in New England, stepped to the podium at Gillette Stadium this morning, and as such, Six Rings and Football Things is here to give you an instant reaction from all the comments of the director of scouting, de facto general manager of the New England Patriots, Elliot Wolf. I'm Andy Jumbo Hart, alongside Mike Cadlick, WEEI.com, our beat writer. What up? We are brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more, as always. And Elliot Wolf had more to say today, I think, in more specificities than he did at the NFL scouting combine. Last we sort of touched base with him. He had, just quick observation. I don't know if I noticed this before. He's got really nice dimples. Like he just looks like a nice guy. He has that smile. He's got those big dimples and he's just like sitting up there happy to be where he is in life and running the show and all these things. Doesn't seem annoying.
He is fun to listen to. It's not like when you drive down and you got to get ready for a Belichick press conference.
No,
it's going to get scoffed at. I literally, little inside baseball, me and Andy were sitting next to each other down there this morning at the press conference. And at one point I like leaned into him. I was just like, I really like listening to him talk. And Andy was like, yeah, me too. Like, it's like enjoyable. He gives some insight. He doesn't peel back the curtain too much. It's just informative, but it's good football talk. So I enjoyed what we saw this morning.
And I know some people will take that as like, oh, you guys got what you want. We'll see how it works. I don't know. The old cranky guy used to win a lot of games in Super Bowls. So we'll see. Although the old cranky guy ain't so old and cranky anymore. He's smiling it up with his new best buddy, Pat McAfee, with all his trophies. I watched some of it, with his trophies in the background, and everything was a smile. And it felt fake. I don't know what's fake, whether it was the 24 years of fakeness or yesterday's fakeness. It's just, I think Elliot Wolf, to stick with sort of why we're here, likes football, likes talking football, doesn't mind being asked questions about football from other people who, by the nature of their career choices, like football and like talking about football. That's what it felt like this morning at Gillette Stadium, is just people who have common interests, even if not necessarily common philosophies or jobs or roles, common interests. We like football. He likes football. I think we're all football men and women for the most part in that room. That's what it was. Like, it was a breaking of bread. Like, hey, what do you think of these quarterbacks? Would you take this? And he's like, yeah, no, this guy will play left tackle. I think these guys are pretty good. You guys are wrong about these guys. I'm right. Like, the whole thing. So I want to start with just a quick couple bullet points, and then we can use those as jumping off points for more in-depth discussion. But Elliot Wolf, as most GMs do, made it clear Patriots are open for business. They will trade. They're taking calls. They've had calls, not just in the first round, not just up, not just down. All are like, if you have an idea, pick up the phone and give them a call, because they will listen to your idea before they make a decision.
Sure.
Elliot Wolf expanded, I think, the breadth of the net around quarterbacks to some degree. He was asked by Tom Curran about, would he have a comfort level of Daniels, May, or McCarthy at number 3? And he said, yeah, I would. And he said, more than that. I'd widen it. And Tom followed up like more quarterbacks at number three. And he's like, yeah. So people like you, you people who like Bo Nix, you're a Bo Nix guy.
No.
or Michael Penix or whoever. I get a buddy who's like kind of sneaky in on Spencer Rattler, kind of like that scout, you know, as an ex-NFL scout, Spencer Rattler is the best QB in this draft or whatever. Yeah. Elliot Wolf opened that door. He also answered some very, as you said, honest, specific questions. Hey, if you had to play a game today, who'd play left tackle? He's like, well, I hate that phrase, but it would be Okorafor. Like, right. He's played it in college. We studied that. We think he can move over there. I'm thinking of other the news things before we start to break down the tone and the tenor.
Yeah, well, one thing that was interesting, too, I thought was just he was asked about the Calvin Ridley sweepstakes, and he straight up was like, yeah, it came down to money.
That was easier than the owner's answer.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Robert, well, his girlfriend didn't want to be here. Like, okay.
And taxes and, yeah. and this and that. And he's like, yeah, the other team offered more money than us.
Right. That's what it comes down to, and that's what I liked about the honesty factor with him. It's like, look, that's what it was. That's what this business is. It came down to money. They offered more. Sorry, we weren't willing to go there. That's as annoyed as we get about the Patriots not spending money, and everyone's like, they don't spend and they don't go to the cap and blah blah blah. And I get that, but if you're at least honest about it, I can respect it. It's like, we didn't want to go to this number for Calvin Ridley. They did. Thank you. We're gonna move on. Works for me. At least you're being honest, right? So
pretty simple. Pretty simple. Yeah. In fact, he answered one question about why the Packers can draft and develop receivers and the Patriots really haven't. I mean, he put it on Ted Thompson, said he's really good at evaluating receivers and kind of joked, I hope I picked up on some of that. Right. And then he said, I don't really know how to answer that question. So he didn't answer it. Like, that's okay. It's okay to not answer the question. It's okay to say, I don't know, because no one knows everything. There are just some people that pretend they know everything. And take that for what you will. Whether I'm pointing or looking at anyone in particular or thinking about anyone in particular. But no, I would say the overall tone was positive. Like, it didn't seem, I didn't feel stress. You know, there were questions about him. The idea that Robert Kraft has said we're going to have GM interviews after the draft. And he's like, I've never really thought about that. Now, the two takeaways I had to sort of open general discussion here, one of which you'll read on WEEI.com on Friday. My big takeaway was Elliot Wolf likes the Patriots more than you do. And by you, I mean you, me, fans, foes, haters. Yeah. He thinks this roster, especially on the offensive side of the ball, where he noted multiple times, we have NFL receivers. I agree with that somewhat. It's a little old Andyism. There's NFL receivers and receivers who are in the NFL. You have receivers who are in the NFL. I'm not sure how many are NFL receivers, Elliot. And then he said it a second and I think a third time. And then the third time when he said it, he expanded it to, we have a good offensive line. We have a good tight end in Hunter Henry. We have a good running game. He thinks the Patriots, and in particular the offense, which he acknowledged that he reads things. He acknowledged that he's heard the narrative that they are not able to support a young quarterback. And he does not believe said narrative because he thinks he has the coaches to do the job, specifically praised what he's seen from Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo and that other guy. Who's
DC McCartney, the quarterback.
Yeah, McCartney. He praised those, but I would say he emphasized many times the ability of his receivers. And here's where I'd say you have your big dimples and your smile while you say that. I can smile too and say, Elliot, I disagree. I still think you are lacking, especially at the receiver position, where I think I can make an argument. Juju is no longer an NFL receiver. I think that's very much debatable. Okay. Kayshon Boutte, I'm not sure he's an NFL receiver. He's in the NFL, but that doesn't make him an NFL receiver. I do believe Kendrick Bourne's an NFL receiver. I don't know how healthy he'll be to start the year, so he's in his own category. And I believe DeMario Douglas is an NFL receiver if he can stay healthy, because part of being an NFL receiver is, as we learned over the years with a lot of guys, like, I firmly believe Wes Welker's greatest ability was take massive hits, get back up, jog back to the huddle, shake it off, and do it again on the next down. Right. So,
and they tried to, when he got and got too much money, they brought Danny Amendola in, and he was good, but he didn't stay healthy nearly as much as Wes Welker did.
No, and that's huge. That's huge. Yeah. So, because, you know, he was asked, Elliot Wolf was asked about, do they have an X receiver? And, you know, he got very detailed in a 3-by-1 formation. Do we have somebody that's going to win every side on the every time on the backside? And he's like, I don't know. We'll see. But that's when he went into, we have good receivers. We have some versatility. We think they can play various roles. Again, I don't know if I still want to. And I did get a text from Mike Giardi, who was listening to this from afar on a college visit with his son and stood by his, to some degree, stunk comments from last year. So Elliot Wolf and Mike Giardi not on the same page in terms of the Patriots wide receivers.
So, and this is another layer to, I like his honesty. Like, I think he's telling us what he believes in this offense and this receiver room, and the fact that we have NFL receivers. And he was asked about the X receiver and said, I think we have guys who can play X. Now, do we have a guy that can split out, like you said, on the 3-by-1 and win? I don't think so. And good for him for saying that. Because, like, I look at, you know, in a guy like KJ Osborne, who he touted a little bit, right? Like, they have – he's mending the fence and sort of playing the one side of where you don't want to piss off the guys in the room, but you also acknowledge that you need a little bit more help here, right? And he said it without saying it, that they're probably going to need some help at wide receiver, because he also mentioned – I mean, look, they went after Calvin Ridley, and he mentioned today that they are listening to – and making calls on the wide receiver trade market. And look, it's more so I want to see what they do rather than what they talk about, because there's an NFL draft next week and there's the ability to trade draft picks for, you know, top tier wide receivers, or there's ability to draft 3 or 4 wide receivers in 7 rounds, right? And so when you do that, and what happens next week, that's going to tell me more what Elliot Wolf thinks about the receiver and then what he actually, you know, tells us in person, right? Like, he's not going to sit there and say, yeah, Kendrick, I don't know how healthy he's going to be, and Juju's kind of fallen off, and, you know, Kayshon Booty's got to stop making part. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he's still telling us the truth without, I guess, burning bridges right away again, which is something I enjoyed listening to.
Absolutely. And that's a great point you make. My former boss man, Fred Kirsch, over at Patriots.com, was a big believer, even the Belichick years and the team as a general. Don't listen to what they say. Observe what they do. And their actions will tell you how they feel about depth and positions and players and whatever. If he goes out and takes one receiver in the 5th round, putting his money where his mouth is. He does believe they have better receivers. If he goes out and trades up for A.D. Mitchell and then swings back around in the 3rd round and takes another receiver, this was all BS today about how much he likes his receivers and how good they are and how NFL capable they are.
The former is what would worry me, right? If he does believe what he says today, and that this can survive a full NFL season and go win a Super Bowl, right? I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't expect him to trash the receiver room, but I expect him to act on it and understand that, you know, it does need to be supplemented and they do need to fix it.
Right. And he does set expectations. He didn't put anybody in Canton. He didn't say Okorafor is going to be. He did literally say he's a Hall of Famer. Yep.
Yeah.
And I probably agree with him. He's got 2 MVPs, so he's probably well on his way to being the Hall of Fame. He had some interesting comments that had it been like a radio interview or a podcast interview, I would have liked to follow up on. Side note. Is it me or is that media room blow in terms of being able to hear questions, hear answers, get questions? Like, it's a terrible setup. Horrific setup.
Great. Yeah, they don't have the audio right. I know, and as far as I know, like, it's temporary while they continue their reconstruction. I think we're gonna get a better setup eventually. But yeah, it is it's good for I'm glad that I'm going to be on the Rich Kiefso draft party and not there on draft night, because we're not going to be able to hear anything and we'll just get a pump through audio on like YouTube or something. Right.
Unless you sit in the front row, you can't get a question in and you can't hear the questions and you can't hear the answers. Like it's they've been multiple places in that building. This is by far the worst. It is tough to do your job. Okay. Side note, stop bitching, Andy. No one cares. Especially the listeners who just watch at home on like Patriots.com and
more. But you used to work for Patriots.com. Make a damn call. You fix it. You know, guys over there.
Not sure they answer my calls anymore.
Yeah, that's true. Especially when you bitch about them on your new podcast.
That's true. That's probably true. There was one word beyond the talent, disagreement. I think we can have with him over some of his roster. There was one word that I loved. Do you know what that word was?
No.
So Elliot Wolf disagrees with Yoda. What? Who?
No.
Rich Keefe's interested. Rich Keefe just like heard this and he's like, whoa, whoa, I don't usually listen to these idiots, but I'll listen to this.
Dork
Elliot pod? Wolf disagrees with Yoda because okay. his spin multiple times was, I'm going to try to do what I believe is right for the New England Patriots. Mm-hmm. Try to make the right decision. Try to do the right thing, which some would be like, yeah, don't all GMs. No, no. Bill Belichick said, I always do what's in the best interest of the Patriots. Mm-hmm. There is a, I don't know what word people want to use. Arrogance was brought up in the ESPN story yesterday. Mm-hmm. Hubris, whatever you, just flat out incorrect. Everything you do isn't right. I don't care who you are, what your job is, what your role is. Not everything you do is right. All I care about, if we're going to talk about trustworthiness and being a boss and evaluate, did you try? Because we all F up. We all make mistakes. And Elliot Wolf, I think this is, it may be accidental. It may be intentional. I don't even know. But him saying, I'm going to try to do the right thing for the New England Patriots. Try to do my best.
Yeah, we're going to try to get this thing right. We're going
to try to get it right. There's no guarantees. He's been around this a long time with his dad, multiple teams, the whole thing. Right. Whereas Bill Belichick says, I do what's in the best interest of the football team. I did what was in the best interest of the football team. He's used it past tense before. And sometimes we know that's not true. Right. There's been glaring examples, Super Bowl examples, dynasty examples. Robert Kraft called him out for some examples. Right. So I really like that. He just comes off as confident without being arrogant. And I know some of that probably says, you know, talk to me in 10 years if he has 4 Super Bowl rings and he turns this dynasty into, you know, 4.0 or whatever the hell you want to call it. But I just, for a guy in his spot, that I'm going to try to do the best I can in the role I'm in. I like that.
Yeah, I do too. And I like the attitude and I like that it's more forthcoming than what we saw with Bill. But, and maybe this is like recency bias with seeing Bill yesterday and looking how giddy he was and everything. And like, I sat here for, you know, the whole season last year with you and said that, you know, his arrogance pisses me off and I can't stand it and that I want him gone just as much as the next guy. But like, honestly, I look at him saying that, well, I'm doing what is in the best interest of the team. I still think he meant I'm doing what I think is in the best interest of the team.
Correct. Now, he tried. He tried to do what was in the best interest. Yeah. I believe that, but he didn't say that. Elliot Wolf says it. He said, I do what's in the best interest of the team. Don't question me. God complex. I am God. God damn it.
Yeah, I get they're definitely. I will say that as much as I think that that's what he was portraying. There was a portrayal that, no, I know that this is what's right now. And Wolf is saying, we're going to just give it our best. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, I'm going to be sent packing. Kind of like what he said about Lamar Jackson. If we picked him at number one in Cleveland, they would have sent us to pack our bags. But
I found that interesting too. Like that he acknowledged that. So was there a discussion of that at the time? Like, we actually like Lamar better, but we know we can't take him here.
I think it was a little bit more like, at the time, there was no way in hell he should have been the number one pick. So even if we did like him, I guess we're on the same page. We can't do this, but I don't know if they actually liked him that much.
Yeah, I that was interesting. I mean, not really.
Curveball. I mean, and now we're just doing a conversation on the 2018 draft. But like them going getting Baker at that point was pretty ballsy because it was Sam Darnold's the better passer and Josh Allen has the higher ceiling, but Baker has the attitude and the swagger and the, you know, he played more games and he's accurate. Right. And they didn't care about everybody else's rankings or what everybody else thought. They said, no, we like Baker Mayfield and we're going to take him number one, which makes
some degree. Cause if they liked Lamar, they did care. Like maybe Baker was close enough to, selectability, whereas Lamar was too far out. And that's why I think it's an apt comparison or just a piece of information that's worthy at this time where it's like he's telling Tom Curran when he asks, Would you be comfortable taking these three quarterbacks at three? Yeah, those guys and others. Like, right.
No, that's true.
Is Bo Nix in the mix? Is Michael Penix in the mix? Is Spencer? And was there a lesson learned? Yeah, I thought Lamar. And the other key aspect here, he was asked about, do you take basically the quarterback based on first year readiness or long-term upside? And he said long-term at every position, long-term. So that's an argument for, you know, some that have said Drake May needs a year, needs 2 years, going to be developmental, going to be slow, whatever the upside downside. Cause he was also later asked about when Gerard talked about the floor for a Drake May,
right.
But I think he acknowledged the potential is the most important thing. If you believe, and maybe Lamar also ties in there, would Lamar have been ready for them in Cleveland? Whatever. But if you believe Lamar is going to be an MVP a year, two, 3 years down the line, whatever it may be, or Josh Allen is going to be an MVP 2 years, 3 years down the line, that's the right pick. And that's in sort of juxtaposition to this NFL ready thing we've talked about, where Mac Jones was NFL ready, except he really wasn't, or JJ McCarthy might be NFL ready, except he really isn't, or might not be. Like, right. I don't know, who's the best talent? Who has the most 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 8 years, who's the best quarterback long-term? And he said, that's the guy he's taking, which I took, again, because I'm biased. Hashtag take Drake is how I translated that.
Me too. And even his answer about Jacoby Brissett was, he's our bridge guy. We like what we can do now. But he literally said, and I'm reading off the transcription, we feel like if we end up drafting a quarterback high, he's someone who can support that player and will be a positive influence on them while competing with them. So, like, Brissett knows why he's here too. Because these are conversations they have before he's signing. Is, hey, we have our eyes on some QBs. Are you okay with that and still essentially willing to sign this contract to be our bridge guy? And Jacoby says yes. So they have their sights on quarterbacks. We know that. But to hear him actually say it and acknowledge it, I thought was another, again, interesting point where, like, Bill Belichick would never tell us why Jacoby Brissett was brought to this team. He would say he's a good football player. We feel like it was the best and is in the best interest of the team. So to peel that back more was good.
And I've been led to believe they had some pretty serious conversations when considering who that guy should be, would be, could be, and eliminating certain guys that they felt still had too high an expectation or hope for their own career. Sure. And I don't want to take Gardner a shot Minshew. At
Marcus
yeah, Marino. A Minshew, a Sam Darnold, a guys that probably still hold out hopes that they can be starters. And I don't, you know, Jacoby, it is what it is, but I think he probably knows what it is to some degree at this point in his career, who he was.
Having that self-awareness is ginormous in really any profession, not just football, but like in his situation, to understand what you are and where you are in your career, it's not going to cause any rifts in the quarterback room. It's just, this is our deal, and this is why we're on a football team.
And it's not always easy for guys, and it's a balance too, because you don't want the guy that's, you know, eating a hot dog on the sideline because he's just collecting a paycheck and doesn't give a rat's ass. I don't care if I play, don't play. I actually didn't read the game plan this week because, you know, whatever. So you don't want that guy, but you need a guy that isn't trying to. And I don't know the truth, but, you know, if you believe Johnny Manziel, Brian Hoyer wasn't great for him in Cleveland. Right. Now, Brian Hoyer has pushed back very strongly against that and denies it, but whatever. Different dynamics in different places.
Right.
You need the right dynamic. Because we've seen, it's not just about, is a guy talented? It's not just like, there's a lot of layers to developing a quarterback in the NFL and having that quarterback succeed initially, succeed year two, year three, develop, evolve. And Jacoby Brissett could be an asset, or he could be a detriment, right? Or that guy, whoever that guy is. I think Jacoby Brissett is the perfect guy. Personally, I believe that they landed on a really good guy. But we'll see. And it was interesting to have Elliot acknowledge that as part of the process here. Anything else jump out from you in terms of what Elliot Wolf had to say? He spoke for what? I don't know, 18 minutes, 16
minutes?
Yeah,
something like that.
Wasn't the longest ever, but it was fine.
No, I guess just, we already touched on it really, but their willingness to trade up and down all across the board. But he also mentions the, having more draft picks is good. Like, we want to draft and develop. So I look at the idea that I mentioned before of, and I've touted this and I've written about it and I've said it on other podcasts, I said it on this podcast, that they need a number one wide receiver for this young quarterback. And it's, you're better off trading for one than, you know, using what you have here. But him telling us that they want to draft and develop and they want to accumulate picks if they can tells me that this is not a 2024 fix. It might not even be a 2025 fix. They are truly long-term building this thing from the long haul, for the long haul, from the ground up. You look at their past, the past, you know, regimes and places he's been in Cleveland and in Green Bay. They don't really make those huge splashes. I guess they did in Cleveland a little bit with like Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham, but like Green Bay, Devontae Adams was drafted there. And the guys from, you know, a few seasons ago, right? Christian Watson was drafted there. Jaden Reed was drafted there. Like this is going to be a slow burn. And the burn cash comments have been brought back. And I think Gerard mentioned playoffs. Like Elliott Wolf has kind of made the expectation clear that we are building this thing for the long term. We're going to draft and develop this team. So the long story short is I'm not counting on them to go and actually trade for said wide receiver on the open market or on the trade market rather.
And he's doing it long-term while comfortably acknowledging the idea that they could hire a different GM if they wanted to. Now, right. I don't believe he believes that. I think part of the reason he's sitting up there smiling with big dimples is he's got a good job that he knows is going to be his job for a while. It was interesting that he, first of all, it was interesting. I wanted to go back to how he started thanking, but the crafts, Mayo and staff, the collaborative, the scouts, the families of the scouts. I like that. And people have done that. Bill has done that. Matt Groh, I think, did something similar. It just seemed, and this is unfair. This is totally unfair. I'm going to say it, even though it's unfair. Yeah. It seemed more honest and natural from Wolf, like bringing up specifics like, oh, guys were on vacations and then they had to go to pro days. Like he really thinks about the work-life balance and the family life balance. And again, I guess I'm playing your side of the street, or Fitzy's not here. Mayor Fitzy, according to Daniel, like he's not here. So I guess somebody needs to be the homer. I'll be the homer, I guess. Like I'm hook, line, and sinker. I bought. If you asked me, first of all, beforehand, if you asked me who was most qualified to do their job in the new regime, it's Elliott Wolf based on 100%. Paper.
Right.
And then the way he's handled his job in the first, whatever, 100 days of office, as they'd say for a president, he's been the best. He's been better than Mayo. He's been better than Robert Kraft, even in whatever the new role is and more vocal role. Like, I'm buying Elliott Wolf. That's it. I'm all in on Elliott Wolf.
And so
I'm part of the Wolf pack.
I don't think it's a press conference, hook, line, and sinker, like he's buying us thing. I think it is what you just said, and it's the resume, and it's what he's done in the past with Green
Bay. It's also how he says it and everything.
Yeah, right. It's helping his cause for sure. Yeah. But when they made the move, everyone jumped down the nepotism and in the building and not trying to hire a GM, and oh, he's just in this position because he's Ron Wolf's son. And like, that's not true. Like, did he get in front of a room because he was the son of a quality general manager? Of course he did. But that's how the world works, is connections. It's what you do once you get in the room that ultimately, you know, dictates how successful you're going to be. And the reason that Elliott Wolf is still around and still in front offices and is still a notable name is because of the work he's done post Ron Wolf retiring in Green Bay. So he has been qualified to do this job, and he has been for a while, and he's had general manager interviews in the past. Now he's getting the opportunity. He's thankful for it. He's saying all the right things. And I'm with you. I'm bought in, because there's no real reason not to be right now, because he was qualified and he has said the right things. Now, he said it himself today too. We haven't even played week one. So for lack of a better way, and this is not a direct quote, but he basically said, like, when things go badly, that's when we're going to be judged. And that's how we have to look at this thing, is when things go bad. So until something does go bad and until they give us reason to doubt it, I'm on board. I think he's qualified to do this job right now.
Right. And I could feel the exact opposite by about 9 p.m. next Thursday night, depending on who he takes or what he does with the third overall pick. Because if they just announced JJ.
Third overall.
If they take J.J. McCarthy or Penix or Nix or then I'll be ripping him and say he's not qualified and we need to do GM interviews in May and find somebody who is competent to get in here and actually do what they need to do to turn this team around. But for today, we did have one question quick from Rico Zorro. Fourier says QBs are made. Noted quarterback expert, I should add before that, Christian Fourier says QBs are made throwing over the middle, which J.J. McCarthy did in college. Is that worthy to aim for J.J. over Drake May? No, it is not. It isn't. I'm sorry. J.J. McCarthy has never been asked to be a franchise quarterback. He has never shown the ability to be the man. He was a guy on the bus toward a national title, not a guy driving the bus to steal the discussion that the NBA guys, Shaq and Charles Barkley, often have about NBA players. Are they driving the bus? Are they riding the bus? Who's a real, you know, central figure? J.J. McCarthy has never been that. He had the best offensive line in the country, had one of the best running games in the country, had the best defense in the country. Games were played on his terms. Oh, he had the best coach, you could argue, in the country, who was now promoted to the National Football League and got any job he wanted. J.J. McCarthy, to me, is a borderline first-round pick. That is what he is. He's the fourth quarterback. I can't say it enough. He's the fourth quarterback in the draft class. He's worthy of consideration as a developmental franchise quarterback. I like his skills. I think he has a lot of intriguing abilities. And you can talk about the intangibles, and you can do all those things. But if he's taken number three overall, I think it's a horrific pick. And I think it'll be reason, as Elliot joked about Lamar Jackson, for him and the rest of these people to pack their bags and move on, because it's time for a change already.
So when you say it's going to be, it would be a horrific pick, do you think it's a horrific pick if Minnesota trades up to four and takes them?
Oh, God, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
If they stay at 11, which I've now seen, now there's mock drafts where they just stay at 11 and take J.J. McCarthy. I'm fine with that. But if you give up, you know, 23, you give up next year's one, that's a massive investment. You're saying this guy is a can't – I'm putting – the future on the line because this guy is the future. Like he's that good.
Right.
And despite what the 49ers have done, it's hard to recover from that. Now the 49ers are just the outlier where you can make the worst trade in the history of football and still be going to Super Bowls and having the best roster in the NFL and whatever. But yeah, if he goes in the top handful of picks, I just think it's too much because you got to give up. Now I wouldn't say that about, even though they have a bad track record here, like if the Giants at six take him, that's where I'd say, well, the difference between six and 11, or if you believe in him developmentally, take him. But to trade up, if you're Minnesota, that's where like you really, really, really are giving up something to get him. He has to be can't miss.
But I like what Minnesota did anyway, because like you put yourself in position where, okay, before we do our visits, we're going to add an extra first round pick. And then you go through your process. And if you like J.J. McCarthy enough, you now have the capital to go get him. Or if you like Drake May enough or Jaden Daniels enough, you can call New England and set up the Godfather offer.
Right.
Or if you don't like any of them, you still have an extra first round pick. And if you're sitting there at 11 and you liked J.J. and he's there, you take him. Like, I don't. As much as I'm sure, you know, what's their GM's name? Quessy something. Like I'm sure he's on the phone wanting to move up because they want a quarterback. But I don't think they're going to be desperate, because you just sit there and you have two first-round picks and you have Sam Darnold and Justin Jefferson, and you can make it work. So, I mean, I like what they did in general with that pick.
Well, I think also, and I may be reading too many tea leaves from afar here, that's also partially involved with Justin Jefferson in that it sends a message like we're trying to do stuff. We're not like pulling the plug and resetting post Kirk Cousins. Like, no, we're going to try to go get the quarterback. We're going to add to this roster, which I don't know if that matters to Justin Jefferson or not, or all that matters is, you know, $35 million a year or whatever the price tag is. Like Elliot Wolf said, like somebody just paid him a lot of money. That's why he's where he is. But if you're trying to almost NBA, like you hear this a lot in the NBA, it's not just the money because they're all getting max deals. But like, are you invested in building a winner around me? Like Giannis wants to be like, are we invested in Milwaukee? I feel like that move shows we're invested in the present. We're not rebuilding. There's no bridge years here. We're trying to win. So, yeah, there was part of that. But
and to answer the question, too, on throwing over the middle, like, yeah, JJ can do it. But like,
So can Drake May.
So can Drake May. So can
and he did it more often.
Yeah. So Look, I don't think that's going
to I'd also like to see like the throwing over the middle show, you know, he didn't throw the ball that much. He averaged barely 20 passes a game. He had a boatload of games with less than 20 passes. What passes are you talking about over the middle? Were they play action passes where he faked it to the 1,500-yard running back Blake Corum and then threw over the middle? Because I could effing do that. Because any smart linebacker is like, more often than not, he gives it that to that guy. So every once in a while, you're going to get one over the top of me because I'm stepping up to meet Blake Corum so I don't get embarrassed in the effing hole.
And I also think, yeah, as important as throwing over the middle can be, I don't think that's what makes quarterbacks. I'm going to have to disagree with Fourier here. I think there's so much more than that one instance that, you know, makes or breaks a franchise quarterback.
Especially now. Like, it, you know, we've talked about the comparisons of the top guys and, like, are you going to tell me that Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen and Joe Burrow are the same guy? Like, they have the same strengths and the same reason they're top five quarterbacks? I would argue no. I would argue they're very, very different. Very, very different. And yet, at the end of the day, you have four organizations that are like, Lord, thank you for giving me this guy because he is the guy, right? Like, so as much as I love Fourier and his great knowledge of quarterbacks and
the fact that he played in the league and we didn't.
Sure. And all of that. But I will also tell you things Fourier has said about, you know, leadership, and this might be a J.J. McCarthy positive too, but like quarterbacks he had that would come to the huddle and say Ron Burgundy type stuff where like the play would end with a question mark and you're like, did you call the play or are you questioning the play? Like whole aura of being a quarterback that Tom Brady, for example, Bill Belichick said, you know, that rookie year, he took over the rookie class. He took over the huddle. He took over everything. Like it was clear this was Brady's team in terms of the young players. So, you know, there's a lot of layers to that position and how you get successful. But to bring it back around to our guy, Elliot Wolf, who spoke at Gillette Stadium today for more than 15 minutes, made it quite clear the Patriots are listening to and actively taking phone calls, trade offers, foundations are being set for potential discussions, not just in that 15-minute window, so they're prepared to go. And he made it clear they've had discussions, not that they're open, just open for business, that they've had discussions. So my dream trade, I probably should have asked him, would you take? Because he said the bag hasn't reached him yet. They haven't gotten the bag yet. Yeah. Would you take 3 first-round picks and Christian Darrisaw from the Minnesota Vikings? The other question
say to that, if you just straight up asked that,
he'd be like, I'll prefer to keep that to myself or something. Yeah. Who knows? He'd probably smile. I'd see his big dimples. another question that I kind of didn't really think of, but our buddy Kevin Stone over at New England Football Journal was trying to get in, I guess. Tom Brady has said if the phone rang, he would answer the phone. Would you dial the phone toward Tom Brady?
How did nobody ask that today?
I don't know. Now, I will say Elliot Wolf sort of did a Bill Belichick, and he started and he said, you know, so with, you know, after his open, he said something to the effect of, we're here and with that, I'll take questions on the draft and the process.
True. Very like, true.
He tried to, I think, angle it in into that, which I think is more about, so don't ask me about Robert Kraft or Bill Belichick or dynasties or any of that crap. I'm here to talk football and draft picks. But
Rod
I also
Dale did that when we went down there. You were there, actually. But the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator press conference we had with them, he was like, I'm answering questions about our coaching staff today, essentially saying we're not doing anything about the draft. So they've done that. They're setting themselves up for, I guess, a cop out, a back out, if you ask something what is on the agenda for today.
Right. But it is a question that I feel like we should ask at some point. You know, Tom Brady brought your team's name up and said he would answer phone calls. Would you call? Because that certainly could change you. And I actually think you could spin it into, if you sign Tom Brady, it would alter your draft process, to use your word, right? It would it would tie into the press conference to what we're here to talk about, the draft. But any other nuggets, takeaways, things that you found interesting from the Wolf Man?
Not necessarily, but the overarching, you know, takeaway is that I enjoyed it. He's fun to talk to, and thank God we're only a week away from this draft, because I cannot wait to pivot our content and our focus from what they could potentially do to, okay, they did it, now what's next? Because this draft process has become quite exhausting.
It has, but I'll tell you one person who didn't seem exhausted. Elliot Wolf.
Yeah, no, he's excited. I like it.
Not worn down. He's excited. He's talking about enjoying these QB visits, getting them in the building, getting to know them, that's another layer. Everybody has the tape and the workouts, but, you know, getting a feel for them in your building with your people is part of it. So he talked about that. And as I said, my two takeaways, he likes his team theoretically more than we do, unless that changes when he takes, you know, two wide receivers in the first two rounds or something and tells us exactly how he feels about his depth chart or pulls off a trade for a veteran wide receiver and makes it clear they needed a number one wide receiver, like a lot of us believe. Yep. And there's no arrogance. And I know they've talked about that. No egos. Gerard Mayo said that multiple times in one of his press conferences, but him saying he's going to try to do what is best for the Patriots, try to do what his job is this week and for the next week plus at the very least, who knows where it'll go from there. And didn't shy away from any topics or questions. And when he did, he said, I don't know how to answer that, which I've always said, that's okay. Now, you can't go to that pitch too many times. That's got to be an off-speed pitch. It's got to be a change of pace. If all of your answers are, I don't know how to answer that, then you suck at your job. So there's a fine line there. You can't go to that well too often. But for here and for now, my biggest takeaway is I like Elliot Wolf. I like what he's doing. I have confidence that he's going to do the right thing. And quite honestly, I have confidence that he's going to take Drake May at number three overall if Drake May's on the board at number three.
That's overall. The other overarching thing out of this is that they're taking a quarterback at number three, and it's going to be Drake May or Jaden Daniels.
Right. I mean, unless something weird goes wrong with Adam Schefter telling Washington fans to buy jerseys or some craziness with Caleb Williams or something,
right.
Drake May is going to be on the board at three, and Drake May is going to be on the splash page of Patriots.com for jerseys immediately. They'll ask you to order them, try to break that record for Caitlin Clark that she just set in the WNBA, show the power of Patriot Nation and your purchasing power. I'm sure Robert Kraft would appreciate that. He's been a little bit down in the dumps, I think, PR-wise. That might help him feel a little better if he sees that they sold, I don't know, like a couple hundred thousand Drake May jerseys on draft night. So the hype train is in full effect. He's Mike Cadlick. He'll be with me and Rich Keefe and Chris Scheim and Fitzy and a cast of thousands next Thursday night on WEEI in Boston, 6 to midnight. Obviously, you can get that on the Odyssey app. It'll be streaming on WEEI.com. We'll be on Twitch, WEEI, the whole damn thing. It's going to be one way or the other. It's going to be one of the most interesting, entertaining, energetic nights in Patriots history. Hopefully, that includes a new franchise quarterback. Yep. Until then, he is Mike Cadlick. Then I'm Andy Jumbo Hart. This has been Six Rings and Football Things, a quick reaction podcast, emergency podcast, some call it, to Elliot Wolf's press conference, brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more. Please download the Odyssey app. Subscribe, rate, review the Six Rings podcast wherever you get it, Spotify and anywhere else. We appreciate you listening and enjoy the rest of this week, which is
one more week, the
final week before the next great phase in Patriots football.
See you. The last week that Drake May is not a Patriot for a long time. We hope.
Or we're disappointed next Thursday night. But see ya.